Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. Vote counting continuing in a half dozen states. The nation waits to find out who will be the next president. Joe Biden's campaign manager predicting victory is imminent, while President Donald Trump projects confidence, tweeting, "We will win." And also claiming there is proof of voter fraud. The Trump campaign filing a lawsuit now in Nevada, joining legal challenges already pending in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia. The latest from the campaigns and the states coming up. Also today, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi holding her first conference call with House Democratic caucus members since the election that saw House Republicans gain seats, contrary to what many analysts predicted. We'll talk with a Washington Post reporter about what it means for the Pelosi speakership and the Democratic agenda. And over in the Senate, the fight for control between Republicans and Democrats could extend into next year. One Georgia Senate race already going to a runoff in January. And in the other race, Republican David Perdue leading Democrat John Ossoff, but with just 50% of the vote. If Perdue falls below 50%, then it goes to a runoff. And that could happen because there was a third-party candidate getting a little over 2% of the vote. Optimism from both the Biden and Trump campaign camps today. Biden campaign manager Jen O'Malley Dillon saying in a media call, "Our data shows Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States." And one of the presentation slides read, "Victory is imminent. We are on the verge of winning 270 electoral votes." President Donald Trump, meanwhile, tweeting, "Stop the count, stop the fraud, and any votes that came in after Election Day will not be counted." That last one in all capital letters. States including Pennsylvania and North Carolina allowing for ballots mailed by Election Day but received 3 and 9 days after, respectively, to be counted. Supreme Court allowing those extensions to remain. And today, Nevada added to that list. Ballots can be received until November 10th, 10 days after the election. President Trump also tweeting, "All of the recent Biden claims states will be legally challenged by us for voter fraud and state election fraud. Plenty of proof. Just check out the media. We will win. America first." President Trump has not spoken publicly since the election, since that election night, 2 in the morning. Joe Biden spoke for a minute or two in Wilmington, Delaware.
"Good afternoon, folks. Senator Harris and I just completed briefings on both COVID and the economic crisis facing this nation. And we're reminded again of the severity of this pandemic. Cases are on the rise nationwide, and we're nearing 240,000 deaths due to COVID. And our hearts go out to each and every family that has lost a loved one to this terrible disease. In America, the vote is sacred. It's how people of this nation express their will. And it is the will of the voters, no one, not anything else, that chooses the President of the United States of America. So each ballot must be counted. And that's what we're going to see going through now. And that's how it should be. Democracy is sometimes messy. It sometimes requires a little patience as well. But that patience has been rewarded now for more than 240 years with a system of governance that's been the envy of the world. And we continue to feel, Senator and I, we continue to feel very good about where things stand. We have no doubt that when the count is finished, Senator Harris and I will be declared the winners. So I ask everyone to stay calm, all the people to stay calm. The process is working. The count is being completed. And we'll know very soon. So thank you all for your patience. But we have to count the votes. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you so much."
Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden in Delaware. Pennsylvania's appellate court ruling in favor of the Trump campaign today, giving them the right to observe ballot counters in Philadelphia after campaign officials said they were prevented from overseeing the process. President Trump tweeting, "It was a big legal win." In Philadelphia, outside a facility where the vote counting was taking place, former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi and Trump campaign advisor Corey Lewandowski spoke to reporters.
"Hey, everyone. We wanted to give you an update. They are still not in compliance. Our Our votes are being suppressed. We cannot count the votes properly. What's happening is they have moved the barrier up to 6 feet, but they took away the ballot machines that were in the front row and moved them to the back of the building. It's unbelievable what they're trying to do to our votes that have been legally cast. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, your legal votes must be tabulated, and they're not doing that. They will not let us see anything. They're trying to drown us out now where we can't be heard. We're not going away. And now we're going to take further remedy to fix this. There's a woman who was in there that Corey's going to talk to you about who represented the city with your tax dollars, and he's going to tell you what she's doing. But we are not going to stand for this. We're not going anywhere. They are defying a court order by a judge, and this is not the last of this.
Listen, guys, your taxpayer money here in the city of Philadelphia is going to a private attorney by the name of Michelle Hangley. And what she said was she would determine if the court order was valid or not. And I'll be happy to release the video of her. They have eight attorneys fighting us to see these ballots inside. The court order is in effect. They will not give us access. And the sheriff has decided not to come down here to enforce that court order. The sheriff of your county will not come down and enforce a court order. What is going on in this city? What are you hiding? Open up the doors. Let us in. Let us 6 feet away so that we can have a free and fair election. Whether you voted for Donald Trump or you voted for Joe Biden, everybody has a right to witness what's transpiring here. This makes it look like a kangaroo court. We deserve better, and we're not leaving till we witness every single vote that transpires in here.
Corey Lewandowski and Pam Bondi on Team Trump in Philadelphia. President Trump leads Joe Biden in Pennsylvania by just over 100,000 votes. Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Commonwealth, Kathy Buchvar, was on CNN today saying the state is still working through the couple hundred thousand ballots outstanding, many of them in the Pittsburgh and Philadelphia regions.
So, yeah, I think we definitely could. I think there's about 550,000 some odd, you know, plus or minus ballots that are still in the process of being counted today. Some of those may have already been counted but are not yet uploaded. But yeah, they're coming in. You know, we're getting 10,000 here, 20,000 here. Counties are furiously at work, and it's looking like we're ahead of schedule. You know, I've been saying that we'll have the overwhelming majority counted by tomorrow, but it is looking like we'll have the overwhelming majority counted by today.
And where are those ballots from? Are they largely from the population centers of Allegheny County on the western part of the state, and then Philadelphia and the collar counties around Philadelphia? Is that where most of these vote-by-mail ballots are from?
Yes. There's still about 100,000 or so in Philly. There's about 37 or so in Allegheny. The collar counties, you know, have anywhere. Some of them have finished, but some of them have anywhere from 20 to 40,000 still remaining. So yes, the largest number are in those population centers.
So you said there's about 100,000 left outstanding in Philadelphia, approximately. When do you think they will be counted, and how? And why is it taking so long?
So, you know, they've been doing everything right. They've really been on it. They got, you know, hundreds of thousands of ballots. I think they ended up getting 350 some odd thousand ballots, which is fantastic. And so they've been doing this as quickly as they can. But as you know, this takes time. And for example, last night, I know that there was some question about why they didn't report some for some hours last night. Well, it's because they were doing reconciliation of those ballots, which is exactly what they should be doing. So they're back counting now. I expect them to be reporting throughout the day. And they have a lot of staff, a lot of equipment. And I'm confident, again, that we're going to have the majority done today. Overwhelming majority.
Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth Kathy Buchvar Thursday afternoon with CNN's Jake Tapper. This is Washington Today. Over to Georgia, where with 99% of the vote in, Donald Trump has 49.5%, Joe Biden 49.2%. That from the Associated Press tally. still too close to call. Gabriel Sterling, Georgia's voting system implementation manager, gave an update in Atlanta.
The main thing, there's several things that work on this system, and the biggest one of all is we have a paper ballot, so there's going to be a record of what has occurred here. And if there's any questions, you can always go back to do an audit and a recount. In many places, everything is open to the public. We are poll watchers in many of these places. In places like Fulton County, the state has placed a monitor. And we've had investigators go out with many questions about how these ballots are being handled and move forward. It's frustrating. Time, when everybody else is done, here's the other thing. Florida has more to count than we do, but their margin's wider, so it doesn't matter as much. We have a much smaller margin, and we're aware of that fact, and the county elections officials feel that pressure. They understand. They are working hard. My hats are off to them having to go through this process and be under this level of scrutiny. They're all doing extremely well. And these are 159 elections directors and employees who are here to do the job of protecting democracy. When you go to talk to them, they think about that. They think about the votes of every person in this room and around the country. These are people who are not involved in voter fraud. These people are not involved in voter suppression. I'm telling you, they're doing their jobs every day. It is hard, and we are thankful to them for it, and we're going to work with them to make sure that every legal, lawful ballot is counted.
Gabriel Sterling is Georgia's voting system implementation manager. Thursday in Atlanta, about 60,000 ballots in that state left to process. Legal challenge, though, continue. A Chatham County Superior Court judge in Georgia dismissing a lawsuit by the state Republican Party and President Trump's campaign that raises concerns about 53 absentee ballots that poll observers said were not part of an original batch of ballots. County election officials testifying that all 53 ballots had been received on time. Moving over to Nevada, another state that has not been called yet. Joe Biden leading Donald Trump 49.4% to 48.5%, but that's only with 76% of the vote counted. Again, Associated Press numbers. Joe Gloria, Registrar of Voters in Clark County, Nevada, says it's important to get this right, even if it takes a little while longer.
I think it's important for the entire country to understand that mail ballots on this scale is very new to the state of Nevada. We made a decision here to provide as much access as we possibly could as a result of the pandemic, and so our process has run a little bit slower. We also have to make sure that our data is being updated because we need to prevent people from voting twice in the system. And so we have to scan those in as mail received so that it updates the database so our in-person voters can't have voted twice. We're still receiving information from our Election Day laptops. That'll be complete today. So we're going to update and make sure that all of the information was downloaded from all 1,300 of those laptops that were used on Election Day to make sure that the automated system will reject mail ballots for somebody who has voted on Election Day. So our goal here in Clark County is not to count fast. We want to make sure that we're being accurate. The results in the state of Nevada obviously are going to be very important to the entire country, and that is our number one goal.
What's the outstanding number? One more time, the outstanding number?
I just went through the whole thing.
What's the total? What is the total?
Well, I went through a long process. How about we get together after this?
Why is it taking so long if you can count 70,000 a day?
I think I just answered that question.
Clark County Registrar in Nevada, Joe Gloria. The Trump campaign today, though, moved to file a lawsuit in Nevada saying that tens of thousands of ballots were cast illegally by people who are no longer legal residents of that state. Adam Laxalt, former Nevada Attorney General, now with the Trump campaign, part of a news conference in Las Vegas.
We are filing in federal district court here in Las Vegas. We're asking for emergency relief, a TRO, and injunctive relief. We're asking the judge to, due to all of these irregularities, to stop the counting of improper votes. Thank you.
Adam Laxalt in Las Vegas. The Nevada State Democratic Party Chair William McCurdy III said in a statement, "As the voices of Nevadans are finally heard, Trump and the Nevada GOP have no other recourse than scare tactics and baseless suits. Today, in a shameful display partisan hacks attack the integrity of Nevada's voting system without evidence, threatening to disenfranchise the voices of their fellow Nevadans in the process. Over to Wisconsin, where the vote counting is complete. Joe Biden declared the winner by the Associated Press, 49.6% to Donald Trump's 48.9%. Less than a 1 percentage point difference, about 20,000 votes. The Trump campaign says it's going to ask for a recount. Megan Wolf, Wisconsin Election Commission Administrator, giving an update today.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. The Trump campaign raised concerns about irregularities in several Wisconsin counties, and today in a media call said magical sacks of ballots were being found overnight. We're just trying to check and see, have any formal complaints or any specific concerns been raised to your agency about anything like this?
Thanks for that question. So no, we have not received any report of any irregularities. And again, I know that there were questions. And again, I take those questions seriously when people see that concerning a spike that concerned them, you know, at night in those ballot totals being posted. That's because of central count and all the absentees coming in at night. They all had to be counted until they were finished, and then they all have to be reported at once. And so that's where you're going to see some of those spikes. So beyond that, no, there's been no problems reported to our office, no complaints filed with our office on any irregularities.
Megan Wolf, Wisconsin Election Commission Administrator. Now, besides the any charges of irregularities, if the Trump campaign follows through on its pledge to call for a recount in Wisconsin, and it can do that if the vote total is within 1 percentage point, it's going to have to pay for it because the state only pays if the margin of victory is 0.25% or less. As mentioned earlier, there have been legal challenges filed by the Trump campaign in a growing number of states. Joe Biden campaign advisor Bob Bauer, longtime election law attorney, gave the Democratic point of view on those challenges.
Let me just close by saying a little bit so that you have some grounding in what these lawsuits seem to be about. Let's take three examples, Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So let's take Georgia. In Chatham County, the Trump campaign showed up to allege that 53 late arriving ballots were mixed with ballots received on time. What was the evidence of that? Well, a Trump observer expressed some suspicion about something that may have happened when that observer left the room. That was it. That was the sole purpose of it, the sole basis of it, is sort of an expression of suspicion. So the Trump campaign requested that Georgia counties separate any and all late arriving ballots. Well, that's interesting because that's what election officials are already doing because that's what the law requires. So you have a suspicion that is expressed as the basis for a lawsuit demanding that election officials do what election officials are already doing because the law requires it. I think it's kind of comic, but that's what's involved. Another example comes from Michigan. In Michigan, the Trump campaign filed suit alleging that Republican inspectors should have been afforded the opportunity to witness the collection of ballots from drop boxes, and they asked for the counting to be halted. Well, the collection from the drop boxes was conducted by trained election officials, precisely as provided by law, and the claim is completely meritless. It's a messaging exercise. It has no other purpose than to confuse the public about what's taking place and to support their baseless claims of irregularity. Final example from Pennsylvania. They continue to file suits in this case. In many cases, they're litigating over issues they've already litigated. So they're kind of running out of ideas and they're recycling them. And in other instances, they're filing over utterly immaterial matters like where they may be permitted to stand and observe while the counting takes place. As another example, they've intervened in a pending Supreme Court case involving Pennsylvania. But their lawyers are already there representing the Republican Party. So they're intervening one more time with the same legal team to duplicate a filing that's already taken place to give people the impression that something important is happening in the United States Supreme Court. But in fact, it's not. It's the same old case with the same parties lined up arguing the same issues. Nothing has changed. So let me just close by saying, this strategy of disrupting the vote count, as you can tell by the efforts of election officials to continue to count, is doomed to fail. But in the background, the noise is fraud, irregularity, and the like. And the lawsuits and the disruptive behavior are all for that purpose of trying to get the vote counted, try to confuse the public about what's taking place. And we'll make sure the public is clear about what's taking place, and election officials operating under the law will make sure that the vote count continues. Thank you.
Bob Bauer, senior advisor to the Joe Biden campaign, during a virtual update today, along with the Biden campaign manager, Jen O'Malley-Dillon. You can find the full news conference and all the events you hear on C-SPAN Radio in their entireties at cspan.org, our video library. Mick Mulvaney, former acting White House chief of staff under President Trump, is predicting that the president would absolutely help facilitate a peaceful transition of power if Joe Biden is ultimately declared the winner of the 2020 election. Mulvaney was on CNBC.
Hey, Mick, if the count is done, the votes are counted, the legal lawsuits or the legal suits are kind of run through and decided, and if the vote goes for former Vice President Biden, what would you recommend that President Trump do at that point? Because some of the comments he's made to this point have been fairly concerning about whether he would accept defeat and whether he's going to cast aspersions on whatever results come in if it's not in his favor.
Yeah, I don't think I'd have to make a recommendation because I think I know what the president would do anyway. But you ask a question, I'll give the answer, which is I recommend that he accept a peaceful transition of power, which I think he would do absolutely anyway. Look, the president is a fighter. There's no question about it. And you will see him fighting down to the very last. That's why you saw him mention the Supreme Court in his speech, in his presentation the other night. They are going to fight this out to the very end. And they should. I mean, 65, 68, I don't know how many millions of people voted for them. And they think it's important that they win. Everybody thinks it's important they win when you put your name on the ballot. So you could expect them to fight as with everything they've got to the very end, but exhausting all possibilities. If the process runs, and I expect it to run, and at the end of that process, Joe Biden's the president, you can absolutely guarantee a peaceful transition of power. I just hope the same is true on the other side, Becky. Keep in mind, folks are worried about riots, not in red areas, but in blue areas. It's the inner cities. It's the urban areas that are braced for a reaction. It's folks who don't like President Trump. If we run the process, and at the end of that process, if the president is reelected, will we have a peaceful retention of power? I certainly hope that we will, and I hope Joe Biden, and I expect him to, would step up to help do everything he can to make sure that happens.
Mick Mulvaney on CNBC. He's a former acting White House chief of staff and White House budget director for President Trump. He is now the U.S. special envoy for Northern Ireland. Washington Today continues in a minute.
Continue to follow the vote counting on cspan.org/election. Use our interactive election night map for the status of the presidential race with a current electoral college count, popular vote tally, and a percentage indicator of votes counted in undeclared states. See the results of every House and Senate race and the current balance of power in Congress. Watch statements from President Trump and Joe Biden, as well as key victory and concession speeches, and those from past elections. Find it all at cspan.org/election.
And Washington Today continues. A few days after Election Day, several U.S. House races have yet to be decided as vote counts continue in tight races. But one thing is clear. Democratic hopes of expanding the majority in the U.S. House did not happen. They lost seats to Republicans. Fox News anchor Chris Wallace called out pollsters for their, quote, really bad 2020 presidential election miss, calling the industry broken. On Fox News, the daily briefing with Dana Perino on Thursday, Mr. Wallace said, "I wouldn't want to be in the polling business. It just seems broken." Here's the exchange earlier.
You know, polling, I wouldn't want to be in the polling business. It just seems broken. I don't know how you fix it. We kept hearing in 2016 they were going to fix it and that they had fixed it. It was really bad this time. Wisconsin, one of the polls said that Biden was ahead by 17 points. He wasn't. And you know, the other big story of the night, regardless of what happens for president, is the big blue wave. It wasn't even a big blue ripple. Looks, not certain, but it looks like Republicans will hold on to the Senate. And yes, Democrats will hold on to the House, but they'll have lost seats, not gained seats. So,
yeah.
You know, look, if the Democrats win the presidency, they're going to feel okay about it. But the rest of the races, it was not a particularly good night for Democrats.
Right.
That was Chris Wallace of Fox News. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi held her first conference call since the election with her Democratic members today. And joining us now to talk about that, Amber Phillips, reporter for Washington Post's The Fix. Thank you for being with us. What did you hear about how that call went?
My understanding was that the rank-and-file Democrats who expected to be celebrating by Wednesday, Thursday morning were very upset. The numbers are just jaw-dropping. And to be honest, both of the sides I've talked to are surprised. At this point, House Democrats, were hoping, and Nancy Pelosi herself had thrown out these numbers the day of the election, that they could flip a minimum of 5 seats to add to their majority, maybe 10, maybe 15. As we're talking, they have flipped precisely 0 competitive seats. They 2 were basically given to them because of redistricting. Meanwhile, it's Republicans who were the ones celebrating. They flipped 8 so far by counts, and more could come because there are still many outstanding. It's just the total opposite of what Democrats thought they were seeing in the data and the polling and how they thought their messaging was resonating. And so there's a ton of frustration with House Democrats at their leadership.
Last time the speaker ran, she did get a challenge and she did beat it. Will she be challenged again, and could it be more serious?
It's tough to say. Certainly there's a lot of frustration, but there's also a lot of loyalty to Speaker Pelosi. She helped engineer them getting back into the majority in 2018 for the first time in nearly a decade. And they did it on congressional maps that were drawn by Republicans to keep Republicans in office. I'll also add that Nancy Pelosi said, she's not going to run for speaker after 2022. And so I don't know if there's going to be a challenge or if there's just enough, appetite among Democrats for infighting right now. There certainly could be, but we're only days after the election. I haven't heard any rumblings of it.
On the Republican side, you wrote this: there's a sense in Republican circles that Trump being on the ballot actually lifted them to higher than expected success in House, Senate, and State House races, even if Trump didn't perform as well as they did. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, that's right. So for the second presidential cycle in a row, Republicans are waking up surprised at how well they did, not only in their down ballot races, but also just seeing the race at the presidential level tight, including in these Midwestern and Northern states that Republicans have struggled with, like Michigan and Wisconsin historically. And the connection that I see them making is Trump was on the ballot in 2016. Wow, look how good we did. Trump was on the ballot in 2020. Even if he doesn't win, wow, look how good we did. We are totally surprised. And the quote I keep coming back to is from House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy, who on Wednesday told Fox News, President Trump knew it. He knew the poll of the American public, essentially saying that he felt like Trump had his finger on the American electorate in a way Republicans have never been able to. And so they're giving him credit for bringing out voters to the polls and for them being in the position on Thursday morning of having flipped seats in the House rather than Democrats.
We're talking with Amber Phillips with Washington Post's The Fix. We still don't know who's going to be president, but a narrower House majority. What does that mean for the Democratic agenda, starting with the coronavirus economic aid bill still under negotiation? And then looking ahead, there were dreams of the progressives and their agenda. So where do things stand now?
It certainly weakens House Democrats' majority, although the House is, of course, different than the Senate. And that's because if you have a majority, you have a majority. And sometimes the raw numbers are all that matters. And so I'm not sure, how much that might hurt Nancy Pelosi as she tries to pass her agenda in the House. That being said, you just mentioned something really important. There's a strong, frustrated progressive caucus. And my colleague Rachel Bade reported before this election that there are a number of progressives who are urging their lawmakers, who are on the left and leading this charge to fight for progressive causes, to form a coalition not unlike the House Freedom Caucus, to be a thorn in the side of the leadership until they get what they want. They haven't really done that these past 2 years. And I think if Pelosi, you know, they look at Pelosi with a weakened majority that happened under Pelosi and her plan to try to expand their majority, you know, they could get a little more gumption and decide, let's do this. Let's House Freedom Caucus style until we get what we want out of our legislation. And that could make life very difficult for House Democratic leaders.
Amber Phillips, reporter with The Fix at The Washington Post. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And some more from Speaker Pelosi's conference call today with other House Democrats. This from Politico. House Democratic leaders will dramatically expand COVID testing for lawmakers as the coronavirus pandemic enters its possibly deadliest phase this fall. Pelosi's announcement, partially in response to an order from D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser imposing new travel restrictions for visitors to the city. Back to the presidential race on the latest episode of C-SPAN's The Weekly Podcast. Our guest is Wilfred Codrington, assistant professor at Brooklyn Law School and a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. Here's a portion of our conversation focusing on reforming the Electoral College and if the recent election will engage more people to call for change.
Over time, Congress has apparently seen as many as 700 Electoral College reform proposals, which would require a constitutional amendment. How far have any of them ever gotten over the years? And why have they not gotten any farther?
Yeah, so every time we tried to look at this, there was a problem. And not coincidentally, race played very prominently in it. Again, I'll give two clear examples, one early on and one later. Early on, in after the election of 1800, when, you know, there was a tie between Aaron Burr and Thomas Jefferson, and it almost resulted in this disaster, breaking apart the system, Congress ended up putting out an amendment to reform the Electoral College. That's how we got the 12th Amendment. But when they were considering this, there's a Massachusetts congressman who raised a direct election for the presidency, and it was laughed off the stage. And the reason was, they made it very clear that the reason was that there were a number of slave states that benefited from the 3-6 compromise in the Electoral College. It added, I believe, 21 extra electoral votes for the president that all helped slave states. So when you had it early on, when a direct election could have been on the table, it was just laughed off. And then more recently, if you look in 1969, 1970, the Electoral College resolution that was proposed made it out of the House with the requisite 2/3 majority that you need to get an amendment. And then when it went to the Senate, it was blocked. It was blocked by a filibuster that was supported by the Southern ranks, anchored by Strom Thurmond. And he knew that was because of exactly what I said about the concentration of Black people in the South and how that would give them power and a place in the federal elections where they had typically just not had power. So when we talk about this, it's never, race is never far from the conversation. It's either there implicitly or it's there explicitly. And that's what happens.
You have a book coming out next year called The People's Constitution, which details how the Constitution has been shaped over the generations through amendment process. Do you anticipate that this year's election will resurrect the effort legislatively to amend the Constitution regarding the Electoral College?
You know, I mean, the way that the numbers are playing out, it doesn't look like it's going to be on the short-term agenda, and we don't make any projections about the sort of how quickly Americans are going to be sort of spurred to change the Constitution. But I do think that certainly if President Trump is reelected with an Electoral College win, but losing the popular vote, that will be the third time that this will have happened in recent history. Democrats will have won the popular vote 7 times out of the 8 last elections, and that will be problematic. I think people will be much more interested in it than certainly as a response. I still think that the ground is being laid now in other ways, but it is a heavy lift to amend the Constitution. As I said, you need supermajorities in Congress and in the state legislators to get it passed and adopted and ratified. For me, I make the clear connection between what I'm seeing right now, the level of uncertainty about the leader of our country, despite knowing that Joe Biden leads by 3.5 million votes at this point, and it is very likely to be even more than that. The fact that we're waiting all this time, despite knowing these facts, that President Trump does not have the support of the majority of the electorate, is problematic, and that makes me see the direct tie. I hope the American people do see this and see a direct tie and start pushing for this.
Wilfred Codrington is assistant professor at the Brooklyn Law School, a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, and the most recent guest on the episode of The Weekly. You can find the entire conversation later this evening, wherever you listen to podcasts. On Wall Street, the post-election rally goes on. Best week, it is expected, since April. And the number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits fell slightly last week to 751,000, still historically high level, showing that many employers keep cutting jobs in the face of the accelerating coronavirus pandemic. Before the virus struck in March, weekly figure had remained below 300,000 for more than five straight years. That's it for Washington Today. Stay tuned to C-SPAN Radio for the latest on the election, and enjoy the rest of your evening.